interesting to talk about is possibly like, I know it's called like the algorithm is what everyone calls it. And right. So whenever you want to like go viral, the algorithm likes you. It recently actually came out on TikTok that there's a point system or whatever. That's what everyone thought it was.
Okay.
But like, I think a couple of days ago it came out that someone manually picks the videos that go viral. And if you're already viral on other platforms, so it's called heating up. So they select videos or content up that is going to go viral.
And you're saying this is somebody actually picking these?
There's a manual intervention that picks what's going to go viral is what I was hearing about. I don't know if that's the truth because obviously it isn't like TikTok's going to be like, hi, I'm TikTok and I agree to this.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, it isn't like TikTok officially agreed to like the point system either. Like if you get so many likes, likes to view ratio or completion. I know personally one of my videos like had a 80% like full completion, like watch it to completion. But then it still got stuck at 200 views.
So mine just recently did that too. So we've posted about 6 and we've tried to stay consistent. We've looked at the numbers. Our first 3 were set. We got capped at 853, mm-hmm. 406, and 405. The next 3 sets were literally capped at almost at the same exact numbers, 235, 220, and 206.
Yep.
And I don't understand how it would stop being pushed out, I guess.
And I mean, in addition to that, if you like go click on the analytics, like it'll show you like the percent completion. If you on YouTube, I think if someone watches all the way to the end and it's 15% of your audience watches the whole content, that is good. Okay. And I had a video of me just being cutesy in a New Year's Eve dress. And it got like, I think an 80% completion rate from start to finish.
Okay.
And it got like a lot of likes. And then it stopped at like 205 or something or 206. And I was just like, and then TikTok was like, well, don't you want to pay us to promote it?
Yeah.
And I was like,
so it's funny that you brought that up, that that's new too, or they just released that, because we were on Facebook today and one of our pages got access to quote unquote some new features, is what they said. Mm-hmm. And it sounds exactly what you're saying TikTok does, but it sounds very automated. It said, it says creators who post quality and consistent content will get a boost in exposure on their visibility. And it said increase in visibility will allow for you to have a broader reach and audience as long as you're posting consistently and quality content. So is that like the same thing? Is that where they're just letting you people?
No, TikTok was like, give us money. Whereas Facebook is like, here, have money to me. And Facebook's like, please post stuff. I will give you money.
Right.
And Facebook like gives me the little notifications that pop up like, hey, you've increased visibility for 21 days straight, which means like I consistently posted high quality content that has gotten good interactions. Whereas TikTok's like, well, if you want people to see this and it is good content and we agree it's good content, give us money.
Okay.
And or like someone manually goes in and picks what's going to go.
Right.
In this case, I guess I'm giving someone money or incentive to make my content go viral.
Which would explain why you're capped out at such an... Okay, that makes more sense. Because we were just last week, we're talking to a lot of people about viral content and creating those pieces of content. And I was trying to lean more into saying that it is more easier said than done, because a lot of people want to produce fake and bad content. Like they're not really passionate about what they're talking about, or they're just kind of coming up with ideas that they think are like hooks or attractive on like the platform. And I feel like some of them work, like those are the entertainment reels that you see people like doing pranks and whatnot. But we had our first reel that we did and it was talking about opiates, and it got 2.5 million views on Facebook
mm-hmm.
within a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's still growing every day, and the number originally hit 1.9 and then we're at 2.5 now, but it talked about drugs. And so I'm very curious if you have any input on like, I guess I'm assuming the technology is getting so good where it's listening to the stuff that the videos are saying, and the ones that maybe are talking about very touchy subjects like opiates. Pushing them?
So, I mean, I'm a girl, I'm on girl TikTok, and there is, instead, you're not allowed to say anything sexual or drug related or a lot of different things. And so a lot of girls have been using the term mascara to cover up for something else.
Really?
Like someone, I had mascara when I was 14 and stuff like that. Because if you say those certain things, you will get flagged. And I worked in voice to text, open source voice to text now is so amazing with all the accents and everything. So anything you do is immediately transcribed, and that's an additional piece of data mm-hmm. that's used in the algorithm.
Is that what allows for AI in those tools that I see that if you're saying like a cuss word or in a movie and they can literally reprogram your face to say a whole different word?
That's a deep fake. So that is that's a convolutional neural network that okay. will take images of you and change the way your mouth moves. They call them deep fakes.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
And that's changing like the face. And then, of course, it's super easy to have audio to make you sound like someone else.
Right.
Now. So that's not even a problem. It's just getting to the point where it's like, I don't know if you saw this, but there was a video clip of the Queen of England in the middle of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying some really outrageous things and then did a backflip, and they put it on the BBC. And then afterwards, the Queen every Christmas is supposed to give her little like speech.
Yeah.
That's what they had for her instead. And then at the end, they're like, you should like really pay attention to what you're watching and think about it critically and don't just accept it. Because the BBC with a deep fake of the Queen, like that's and it was intentional.
So, oh gosh. Yeah,
and it was with the subtext of, you know, after 30 minutes, like at the beginning, it seemed really like, Merry Christmas, I'm the Queen, you know, normal.
Okay, I don't want to get conspiracy theorists here, but then do you think they may already be trying that with multiple areas of the news where it's like these aren't actually even happening? It's just already
Have
made.
You seen, there's a clip on YouTube somewhere where they took newscasters from like all the local news and they lip synced it to the same exact message. To point out the fact that almost all local news is owned by the same company.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't consume local news. I consume other sources that are, you know, different. But I like to think what I'm consuming isn't tainted, but I'm sure it is. And it's probably coming from my own echo chamber reinforcing what I think and believe. And I know a lot of people are always shocked because they're like, conservatives versus liberals and all that. And they're like, and I was like, it's okay to be around someone with a different opinion. You don't have to, you know, disagree as long as you're respectful.
Yes. And 100%.
Everyone's like, and I'm like, someone could be completely opposing me, but that's okay.
So that as long as they're not sitting here and saying, you have to think this way, we can't communicate.
So you can have an interaction with someone and be like, I don't agree with you, but I like you as a human.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, like, as long as they're not, like, insulting, like, the very core of who I am, like, I don't like women. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, I'm a woman. I don't know what to tell you.
You're like, that's a little tough one I can change. Can you talk a little bit? You said echo chamber, or what was the word phrase that you said?
Yeah, I think of it as an echo chamber.
So what I'm hearing, and I would love for you to go into detail about this, because that is a big part of the technology that exists that I don't think people understand as to why I see this content. Why does this keep popping up? Oh, it's listening to me, this and that. And I've suggested or gone as far when the net neutrality thing was kind of removed that I'm sure advertisers or big media companies are targeting and advertising by IP addresses now.
Oh, definitely.
There's
That's
no
like a
way.
No-brainer.
Yeah, there's like no way there's not. Well, the funny thing is that people were noticing that the phones were listening to them with ads popping up, right? The thing that I noticed 2 years ago when that happened was that those ads were now popping up on my significant other's phone. And I had never used her phone for any of the things that I was searching. Literally, I think I was searching something very specific. I can't remember what it was. And an exact ad popped up on her phone.
Yes, it's definitely listening. The thing you don't realize is even if you don't like something, like if you watch something all the way to the end, it notices.
And that's what I want you to talk about is how people are influencing their echo chamber without realizing it, because that's why we see what we see, right?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it could start out innocent enough, like you're on a platform, you're scrolling through shorts, and a short for World War II comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You watch it all the way to the end.
Right.
And then, like, you scroll to the next thing, and then it's like, oh, here's another World War II thing. And you're like, oh, this is really interesting. And then all of a sudden, like, Hitler and Nazi stuff is coming up on your phone because, oh, you like World War II. Oh, like, you know, it's not that much of a jump. And then all of a sudden they have people saying their ideologies and you're still listening and you're watching it all the way to the end. And it isn't like they're just going to constantly shower you with that. It's like, oh, 1 out of 100. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden 2, 3, 4, you know, and then half of your feed is like that. And you don't realize it, but it slowly moves your content in that way. And so when you're watching things, even if you're not liking, just watching all the way to the end, or if you leave it open on something and it just keeps rewatching the clip and you walk away and you don't think about it, that's counting on there. I mean, at some point they realize you're not actually watching. But it, you know, puts you into a space, to the point where some creators are calling it out, like, hi, if you saw my video, you're in girl clips now. Welcome to the show.
Got it. You know, yeah, I've seen a couple of those too. Yeah, where it's kind of like a weird clip that I just watched it for entertainment, and then for some reason I'm getting things about, I don't know, just whatever the topic
and
was.
And it's not even like you went out of your way to Google search it. It's just like one clip 1,000 clips ago was that content and you watched it all the way. And it's like, oh, it holds your attention.
Yep.
And then you end up in an echo chamber. So, I mean, like, I understand, like, I'm on a curated, like, news source. Mm-hmm. So it goes from, like, New York, Wall Street, like, all the different newspapers and everything, and puts them all in the same place and, you know, upvotes and downvotes and stuff.
But you as a consumer, you're not just sitting there letting it rain on you and taking it in with a hose, just, like, consuming it all. You're, I'm assuming, using your best judgment, just like, yeah, I don't agree with this, or this, yeah, I know what this is. I know where this is headed, and kind of navigating your way through your echo chamber. Last year I was on social media and I saw, and again, I'm not going to bring up too much details, but I saw somebody talking about the fact that they were seeing a bunch of ads and things on their phones that were targeted towards either abuse or children or something. Like, it was not a good echo chamber. It was like a negative influenced one. And, he was like, this is disgusting. This is promoting all this pedophilia and all these other things and all this weird stuff. And I'm not going to say, because I don't know any details to it, but what it made me curious about was what information is being pushed into his area or realm, and why is that stuff popping up? Why would these ads for watching this or doing this or something that's totally inappropriate? And I never made a comment. I never engaged with it, but a lot of people were protecting him at first. And towards the very end, you started to see some people was like, well, dude, you do realize that the things that you search up and the things that you look up are what is going to keep coming to your phone. And I'm a little curious if what are you searching that's making this pop up? Have you seen anything like that online or anything?
I mean, first off, you have to understand that most of what is behind this and selecting it.
Right.
Hopefully, I mean, in some cases, as we previously highlighted, it was a human and it's manual.
Right.
But it's coming from this thing called a neural network. And it's one of those models that we don't fully understand how it works. And I build these models for a living.
Right.
I build neural networks to help companies with their business solutions.
Mm-hmm.
But the recommendations, if it's not monkeyed with from a human, the algorithm is coming from a neural network. And so we even call it a black box. So it's not 100% certain. But we do feed everything into it. We feed your IP, your search history, like... Mm-hmm. Everything into it, and it's making intelligent decisions about what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't like very clear to me, like, oh yeah, you did this on Friday and this on Wednesday, and now you're here, and that's clearly why we're here.
Okay.
You know, he could have been searching something as innocent as this happened to me as a child, and it's like, oh, and I mean, and now everyone's, and you know, and he's trying to work through some personal prior trauma.
Yeah.
That doesn't always mean people are nefarious.
Of course.
It is.
But it's very interesting to see, like, again, I guess both sides of that chamber, or that box is what you guys called it. Because, I mean, for kids, I'm sure they have one too, right? And where does it start? How early?
Will not let my daughter on YouTube.
Really?
Or anything that has an algorithm that is paired with ads.
Okay.
She loves making videos. She's around people who make content all the time.
Yeah, I was gonna. Yeah.
And so she literally has a tagline already. I'm like, "You're 5 and you have a tagline." Yeah. I don't even have a tagline. Yeah. Thanks, kid.
You're like, thanks. Oh gosh. Yeah.
But I will not let her near anything that has an algorithm that's paired with ads. So she, like, you know, can do Disney and Netflix and all those because there's no ads, and it's not like monetized her time on it because it's a flat fee from me paying for it. But as soon as it's monetized, I'm like,
do you ever think that we'll be able to pay enough to stop a lot of ads, or it's too far into the information that it, you know, gives us? Because obviously Disney, you can pay for a non-ad version, Hulu, non-ad, YouTube, non-ad, but do you really think that's going to push us through to a non-ad world ever?
I mean, cable started out without ads. That's mm-hmm. why you paid for cable, is so you didn't have ads, because the local channels, they would have ads, and cable started out right. without it. And then slowly, oh, just one commercial, just this, just that. And now, you know, cable's full of ads and everyone's ran away to streaming. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing they realized is now that we're all on computers is if they keep adding ads to everything, we're going to start becoming pirates again. I mean, not advocating for it, but I have friends that are like, oh my gosh, I don't want to pay for five different streaming services. I'm going to go back out to like the newest Pirate Bay and go be a pirate. And I know people who have their own servers that are just constantly downloading content, and then they and their like 10 friends all get onto that server and can watch it. No ads. And, you know, one flat fee to whatever that service is. I don't think it's Pirate's Bay anymore, but I mean, I don't play in that.
So do you think that will create a division in social classes then, on terms of what people are being targeted for? Because I'm assuming the people that can only afford paid non-advertised content are people that have the money, right? And so maybe we'll move into a space where, maybe there'll be a segment of consumers that obviously they pay, they don't get any ads, whatever. Now all these people that can't afford that, are they going to be a gold mine? Are they going to be a detriment to the data that they want? Like, they're obviously the pool of people where they can get the information from. If you can't get it from me, if I'm paying you not to, do you think that they'll create any sort of weird division of social advertising in terms of, I mean, obviously they're already targeting people for ads based off their income, stuff like that, but could it get any further, that you think?
I mean, I have really strong opinions just about classism and everything in that space. I think the way that we're going with everything, it's going to be more difficult to go up and down the classes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really easy to fall off, if you will. But like to climb up is difficult. And I think we're in one of the like the last eras where you can have upward mobility or significant upward mobility.
And is that because of people are way too influenced at this point by what we're seeing, or because like, we've lost the ability to realize what is not real and is real?
I mean, it's a lot of different things. Usually, like the way the cheat code is education. Mm-hmm. I interact with like a lot of Ivy League people. I do not have that. I don't have a PhD. And that's kind of the point of Sarah in Tech, is to emphasize you don't need a degree to go out and do great things. But like the door for education and to get in is kind of changing, and money is becoming a key component.
Right.
As well as the fact, like, yes, what we're feeding and consuming, like the algorithm for certain platforms is purposely pushing dumbed down content. And are you aware of that when you're on that platform consuming? Whereas we know for other countries, and this is a well-known fact, they get educated STEM content to elevate their population. And so they're purposely dumbing down another population. And then, like, parents that have money usually limit their kids' screen times. Like, Bill Gates won't give his kid the smartphones, I think, until they're, like, 18 or something crazy.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure the head of Instagram that does the algorithm for that, he literally does not hit, they don't have smartphones either. And I was like, does that not tell us something?
And UT just banned TikTok.
I saw that.
And federal devices banned. Federal
government, university. So, I saw all of that pop up just in the last, month? This month, right?
I think the UT thing was like this week or something even.
And, I mean, you don't have to answer this question because I don't want you to feel like you do. But, like, do you know of any, like, I guess there was a sign or indication that it needed to be banned? I'm sure there was, and that's why it was banned, like the TikTok from the government stuff. They were already assuming that we were being spied on all this stuff, but like there had to have been some sort of indicator that raised the red flag, and it's like, this is it. Done.
It gathers too much data. It gathers data from everything. Like, it gathers everything. So, like,
this is TikTok we're talking about.
As far as I'm aware, it touches everything. So you go into another app that's supposed to be safe or not in there, it can get in that.
Yeah.
And so it's, yeah, it's scary. And that's why they banned it, because
there's too many.
Well, I mean, okay, so you're a federal employee. You mm-hmm. have a government phone. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you're going to go. I used to work in Nuke. Okay. Yeah. So I had a security clearance. You get a government phone. Oh, well, you know, I'm going to put this app on it, TikTok. TikTok's always listening. Like, you can choose to not allow stuff, but, like, it's still always listening and gathering that data. Mm-hmm. And do you really want a foreign country having access to that type of information?
Or instant access.
Yeah, and, like, basically, it's looking at your emails. It's looking at everything. And that's kind of what you're agreeing to. Like, people call it malware.
I mean, is it in the terms and conditions? Obviously, you're not blaming
probably. Everyone.
But yeah, but, like, that's, like... Yeah.
But who sits and reads them?
Yeah. No, I understand that. That's for sure. I mean, I don't, and I'm not gonna act like I do, because I didn't know any of that, and I'm assuming it probably is in the terms and conditions. With that being said, though, I guess, do you know? Can you remind me if ByteDance, the owner of TikTok, they're not Chinese owned anymore? I thought, right? Or what was? I thought Walmart or somebody had bought a portion of TikTok. Otherwise, it was going to get removed from the U.S.
I am not aware. It sounds like you're more educated on that than
okay.
I am.
Okay. So then that's why I'm just so confused in terms of, from the last piece of data I heard about TikTok, it was going to get removed from the United States completely unless it was American owned or it was ours. And I thought the Walton family or Walmart was one of the people that were up for grabs, and I heard they either did or didn't get it. That is why it's not gone from the U.S. And then with it leading into that, and if somebody did get it, then it's almost making me wonder if it just, yeah, did exactly what everyone assumed it was. Even though we bought it and we owned it, it's still collecting all this data. And we found out a little bit later than we wanted to. And
now that we're all addicted.
Yeah.
We're all addicted to Walmart, and they don't treat their employees well. Like, and they're generally a drain on the government. Like, most of them are on welfare or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Because they don't get paid enough.
Correct.
Yeah.
And they don't get enough hours in order to get paid enough to qualify for benefits, because that would actually cost the company money.
To do the whole 36 hours, you're not full-time. It's not 40. It's like, really, guys? 4 hours short? Okay, thanks. Yeah.
I mean, so, like, we're trusting that company?
Yeah, you kind of made me realize that a little bit, obviously.
I mean, it would be different if it was, like, some, like, high moral ground company. But, like, I mean, I don't know who would be considered a high moral ground that I'd be like, yes, I want you to be in charge of all my data. I trust you implicitly.
Yeah, it's a little hard nowadays to even think about that. And, I mean, one thing to apply the technology to, I mean, my industry and the podcast stuff that I do, is that Spotify actually just recently announced that they are opening and testing free studios in Germany and Europe, free podcast studios.
Okay.
If you remember when we first started, we had a free model concept a long time ago, back in 2020.
I didn't do that because I wanted to do video.
Oh, yes, you did. Okay, see, there you go. And the reason why we had the free model concept, and the only the way it ran was based off of ads, mm-hmm. was based off of businesses giving us money so that way we could do them for free, but they'd have to promote. What JP and I were talking about was, and I'm pretty sure this is where it's headed, with Spotify opening studios, they'll be able to get people to produce content at their local studios. Those pieces of content will then be pushed and curated to Spotify-only platforms, because it's a Spotify-owned studio. Why are we going to put it on Apple, right? Mm-hmm. If it's a free studio, I'm curious as who's going to be accepted into the pool of you can use it for free, because our model was anyone and everyone. I'm assuming their model is going to be whoever's best fit for Spotify content. And this will influence a big pool in growth of content that Spotify wants to have produced, not the general public. Because as of Joe Rogan's already experienced, since he got bought out by Spotify, they monitor and they censor his content all the time. They'll mm-hmm. take shows on, they'll take them down. So I'm just waiting to see if this media giant is really going to just end up owning a lot of what we're watching on the consumer level.
But I mean, are you aware of, like, YouTube makerspaces?
They
used to exist and they were free, but you had to meet a certain amount of subscribers in order to get invited to the makerspace. And then you had all these makers mm-hmm. hanging out, making content together, showing up in each other's content so their content would get bigger.
Right.
Which, I mean, is kind of a beautiful thing, I guess. It's supposed to be a creative free space.
Yeah.
But it probably is going to be the same way. It's because they need content, and right now they're not making, like, they're not getting enough content on their platform, so they're going to open this up, get a bunch of content being made that's Spotify only,
yep,
then shut it down because There are no more YouTube maker spaces.
I actually didn't know about the YouTube thing. That is actually interesting.
Yeah, you have to have a lot of friends who are very popular on YouTube. It helps.
I'm just assuming that they're going to really, the only way that anyone can lean into anything free is because of the data that they collect. The stuff they can do with it, the influence they have with it. If there's 100 shows coming out and each show gets 1,000 listens, that's 100,000 people, whatever. Like, they can influence a lot when it comes to content. So it's just, it's a little scary for me because they're so big and that they have the ability to go build multiple studios, like you just said, and probably have all these people come in and produce all these things and shut them down the next day. And it wouldn't ever hurt them.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so, there's no fallout for it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I worked at Apple for a while, and I mean, the only thing I really enjoyed about them was that they were really creative focused and consumer focused. And then when I develop a sense of, I guess, my own personality in the company, I realized it wasn't exactly where I wanted to be because of how they really, I guess, developed their business model, which is very high priced items for not the best deal and creating that ecosystem that locks you in. And once you're in, you can't get out unless you want to delete and get rid of all your Apple stuff. And I'm like, I can't do that anymore. It's just, and I mean, they already got in trouble and they lost in Europe for the iOS tracking advertising thing. And so I'm just waiting for the next 5 years to see if the Apple ecosystem crumbles because they're going to, I have a very good feeling that they're going to lose in the United States in the next 3 years with an antitrust lawsuit about the App Store and about not letting third-party apps be downloaded on an iPhone. If that's the case, then Apple ecosystem is gone forever because there's no need for it. There's no more ecosystem. There's no more controlled information. Is that good or bad? I don't know, because I know Apple does not, they do not allow government, police, or anyone to have access to anybody's phone, no matter what. In terms of public, I guess, knowledge. So I'm just curious, if they kill that ecosystem, will that security for iPhones go away forever?
And I mean, I like the fact that I know I can go out into the App Store, download anything, and I know it's not nefarious.
Yep, exactly. So I'm okay with it too, but and then I'm just curious of which way is it going to go? Because they're saying that that's restricting people to only these app makers versus what happens if people get crazy with it again and they get nefarious and now you're just downloading malware.
And the part that I don't like about the iPhone is all my pictures on there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take them off. Like, even if you hook it up to like an external and you try to pull it off, it's like it's got a stranglehold. I'm like, I took those pictures.
Don't get me started on iCloud, because I learned and studied it a lot and I didn't like how it functioned, especially when people end up passing away. It does a really weird, creepy data like thing.
Yeah. I mean, you can set someone to take over your account.
Now you can. They didn't do it before. And when I was working at the store, if somebody came in and their loved one was passed away, we needed to get a piece of paper, death certificate, purchase receipt, the contract for the AT&T carrier, like all these little pieces. Even though we saw the IDs, everything matched up, the Apple IDs were the same, they're part of the same family, they wouldn't let us do it. Now, you have to preset it, and if somebody passes away, you can still apply for it, and it's a lot less harder to do that. But Apple keeps their stuff on lockdown, and I don't know why. If it's because they really are trying to protect the consumer, or if they are doing their own, data building, or I guess pooling of information for them to be able to create better and better services and products.
I mean, as a data scientist, the thing that I know is most valuable for a company is their data.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the biggest voice-to-text company. Not like biggest, but they had the biggest amount of data. And that's what made them the most valuable. And other companies would want to acquire them for that. And so like having the most data is more valuable than anything because you can't replace it.
Right. You can't remake it. You can't.
And you can say a lot of things about someone. I remember digging into like the guts of, I think it was Google, and it had my socioeconomic class that it was assuming, and like a bunch of other things, because someone passed a law that they had to make it publicly available. And so like, your age and stuff, and it was in age classes and stuff. And it wasn't like I picked from a drop down menu, this is my age and my birthday. They didn't have that at that time. It also had my socioeconomic class that I grew up in, but not the one that I was currently residing in, because obviously, I still behave the way I grew up. Oops.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I hear that.
But it's kind of weird what you can tell about someone. And I mean, you give me 5 pieces of information and I can tell you within like 90% certainty if you're going to commit fraud. Now you're like, what if I, I'm not telling you that part, but like I've created cutting edge models to predict if someone's going to commit fraud based on five pieces of information. We take those five pieces of information and it explodes out to like 170 measurements. You don't realize it. You don't realize how what I can do with five pieces.
Right.
And then I say, oh yeah, they are, or no, they're not, with like very high accuracy. So you don't realize what can be, oh, this is just my name and my email. Do you know how much I can tell about you from your name and your email?
Yeah.
How many measurements that is?
Yeah. So do you suggest people use those softwares that say clear all your data off of the internet? And what is that like?
I don't know about that, but I really like the Apple feature that says hide my email.
Mm-hmm. Because they do randomized email generators with like a key, and then it just forwards that to your actual email. So they don't ever put out a real Apple or real email, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I've noticed that there are fake, or there's websites that you can go get a fake email and send an email from there, and you can't really do anything much more than that. But it always connects back to something, I feel like. It's like crypto. You know, you can make as many wallets as you want, but you could kind of always trace it back to...
Let's not talk about crypto.
I won't go there, but that's what it reminds me of. It's just the tech and the data that
I mean, follows. I met the founder of Celsius in person, shook hands with him. I had money on the platform. Like, don't get me started about crypto.
Yeah, no, the Celsius thing and the whole Binance and...
And I had money in BlockFi, so...
I did not, and I'm glad I didn't. So
I pulled it out, but before everything, but...
Yeah, no, I try to tell people, my little siblings at least, and people that I interact with, that like it, you definitely can't stay closed-minded to the new innovations and new technologies that come out. Like, you really can't. Whether you're going to invest in crypto, AI, becoming a producer or content creator, it doesn't really matter which one you pick. They're all going to be a part of your life eventually, is what I try to tell people. And I try to just kind of promote that being so closed-minded, or I guess against innovation and development and change, is a very dangerous spot to be in, because when you wake up one day and you're like, what the heck happened? That's because you just didn't pay attention. It's not like we're hiding the AI that's out there. We're not, like you said, this technology has been around forever. So
technology that does the algorithm and selecting has been around since the 1950s. We just weren't using it, and we didn't have computers that were big enough and enough data to do something with it. But the mathematical equations and everything that all this is based on, 1950s.
All the same, yeah.
Like, grandma was a teenager back then. Like, right. It's just, we just started using it.
Do you have any suggestions on how people can get in, I guess, just stop being so scared of them, of looking into what it is that you do, technology in general, all these tools that are out there? Like, obviously, we don't want to flood everybody and say, go just do your, go watch YouTube all day, but... There has to be some place that people have to start if they're too afraid to even consider learning about this stuff.
I mean, I just try to stay off of platforms that are ad-based for my time, my visual. If I'm paying a fee to be on a platform and there's no ads, I'm like, oh, okay, I don't need to think, like, whatever.
You don't need to think twice about
it. I mean, you do to a certain extent, but you don't, because you're paying to be there.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh, it's free, I'm on here, and it's entertaining. But they're shoving ads at you, they're collecting your data. How free is it?
Yeah, how free are you really?
Like, when they can tell you, like, you know, they're probably looking at the camera at your face while you're watching it. Do you know how much, like, you can do facial recognition and see different emotions based upon content?
Yeah, that's...
To know what content to show you more of? Because you showed a micro reaction that said you liked that content?
Everyone's just going to start watching content still face. Just,
I mean, all you have to do is get a sticky note and put it over the camera.
Well, there you go. Okay, so staying off of ad-based platforms and sticky note over cameras. That's a good start. I think that's a good place for everyone to start, because I, again, it freaks me out too to think about it a little bit. I do have my base knowledge of tech, but I don't ever want to not pay attention and then just be like out of the blue and be like the people that are like, how do you use the internet? That's just embarrassing at that point.
So have you been paying attention to, like, Gen Z's language?
In terms of what?
Like the verboseness of it. Like, there's so much of it and so many different words and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like a whole different speaking style. I'm like, what did you just say?
But like, I feel like when I was a kid, like, we were saying, like, what's up? And, like, you know, it wasn't too far from the way adults were talking. But now there are just so many degrees. And I'm like, I was even talking to someone. I'm like, oh, I look so snatched. And they're like, what did you say?
They're like, it's funny that you picked that word because I've heard, I think I was actually one of the people too, was like a couple years back. I don't know. I remember hearing a girl say that. And I was like, wait, what'd you say? She's like, did you never hear that? I was like, never mind. And I just ignored it. I was like, I heard what she said, but I guess I haven't heard it in so long that it's just been, it just feels weird now to hear that. I'm trying to think of a word that people say.
Litty.
There, stop. No, it's lit.
Like, what?
What? No. Oh, the TikTok I've been seeing is that there's a realtor going around and saying selling a house to a Gen Z, and they go, oh, this house is so fire. Or they say something, I can't remember what it is. It made me laugh so hard. And I was like, I can't. I could not handle that.
But was our language that different when we were younger?
I don't think it was, but I think we're being biased because I felt like we talked pretty normal and most of the slang words were what's up or chillin' or that's all I can think of. And everyone comes up with all these fire and lit and other words that I don't understand.
I mean, there's channels devoted to being like, this is this word and this is what it means.
No, I can't.
And nope. I'm just like, all right.
Well, I would say that it's probably influenced just because people are they're trying to have more fun with what we've been doing for so long. And I guess you just think that it's cool to make your own words. I don't know. Like, I really can't put a pin on why people would want to change how we communicate like that. I think it's a personality thing.
Do you think it's because we were like so isolated during the pandemic that people were interacting like remotely? And that's kind of where the language changed so much because we were so isolated for what, like 2 years?
That is actually a really good
point. And then
we all
came back and now we're like, what are you saying? And like all these conversations probably happened in Discords and private forums.
Yeah. And actually that you just said that kind of made me realize the change of content and the influence of, I guess, more diverse stuff, because I think people were able to connect on a farther spectrum, seeing people all across the world. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's going to change how I do this. And now you start to talk like this. You start to say these things. You start to act this way. And now you're, this is what it is. This is what I was thinking of. In China, I can't remember the type of content it's called, but it's when you watch people eat. I don't know if you've seen this recently, but there's apparently a big pandemic with creators where people are literally dying or getting health problems because they're sitting on YouTube for hours on end eating very unhealthy foods just for people to watch them eat because it's blowing up in China. And now kids are doing it here in the United States and they're on TikTok or they're on YouTube. They're eating cheeseburgers, hamburgers, and like 40 pounds worth of food because it's a new trend that people like to watch.
I mean, I think that's an old trend. I think, like, there's a YouTuber from years ago where he used to be, like, a skinny dude, and now he's, like, 600 pounds.
Yeah, that just happened again this last, like, 2 months, I think. It's a more recent and modern, I guess, event now, so then people are now paying attention again.
I mean, we were even making jokes at work, like, oh, like, pick what I eat, like, sort of deal. Like, live watching someone, and you could apparently say what they're eating, going to eat, and they'll do it.
Yeah. That's basically, yeah, that's part of it. And I'm kind of like, where do people get these ideas at this point? Because I cannot think of back in the days when we were on our computers and doing that. I think the craziest content people were doing was just like showing people getting hurt.
I mean, yeah, or like doing prank stuff. The weirdest thing is it called EMSR?
AMSR, yeah. Nope, I can't handle that stuff either.
And it's like, what? Why?
Tickles their brain, I guess. Yeah, see, and those are the kind of things that I don't watch any of that stuff. I don't do any of that stuff, but I still feel like I see it all the time. I have no desire to go eat on YouTube. I have no desire to watch those people eat on YouTube.
The irony is, like, I'm on a lot of social media. Yeah. I have never seen anyone eating content.
You've
never... like, eating food as content. Like, that is not given to me.
Okay, well, you have to then tell me if you see that in the next 48 hours.
Because
we just talked about it. Yep, we just talked about it for 20 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. No, wow. Get ready. There's a kid out there. I feel really bad for him. Apparently, he was an incredible kid. He was doing it online. Super big following, was very inspirational, and now he's like 600 pounds. He goes and he does the eating, binge eating, and then he'll just randomly cry and then make a really like self-hatred video, and it's just getting kind of creepy. And it's saddening. It really is. I'm like,
I think that's like an old thing too. Like, I'm pretty sure it happened a couple of years ago because I was aware of it happening years ago. And just like,
No, I just recently started seeing it pop up. I mean, I know people have done eating stuff online, but this is apparently a whole new level of what you're saying. They're like, oh, tell me what to eat. I'm going to eat this. And then there's people that do the candy thing. Have you not seen that? Where they just eat massive amounts of candy at like one color, or they'll eat really cold stuff or really hot stuff. And I'm like, what are people doing? Like, is this really what we're doing for entertainment nowadays? Is this eating food and watching people do it? You've not seen any of that?
No. Yep. I mean, I make workout videos like on some of my clips that I think it knows that I don't want to see.
No, and I think I just hang around with my siblings too much because there's literally no, I don't watch that stuff, but I see a ton of it. And I will never actively go out and watch it.
Now, my question is, how did the algorithm decide like they were the person to send them eating videos? Like, what did they do to have that? And then that goes back to the black box echo chamber and how, you know, and it knows not to send me it. But, like, I'm guessing it's because I have a crap load of workout videos. But, like, really? Is that the real
reason? Well, we'll test the theory. If it pops up and then if you see one thing in the next 48 hours, that would be very interesting. And I'd be very, I don't know what I would say, honestly. You literally just said you've never seen it. Doesn't pop up. So we'll see. I don't know. We'll see what happens because that would freak me out a little bit.
How did you get to the point where you wanted to have a recording studio? When did you decide, like, you were at Apple, you did that, like, a free podcasting to allow access for people to make content, but how did you get there?
It came from Apple. So Apple, when I was around, they did these things called Today at Apple, and they would teach free classes, and they would do a lot of courses, and they would do a lot of in-person teaching things. And the one thing that they didn't start teaching that they didn't do was media. They didn't do podcasting. They didn't do anything focused on media or whatever. They were helping people make apps. They were helping people draw on iPads, code, all sorts of stuff. But media was out of the box. Mm-hmm. So what I noticed was that, and I asked them, I was like, hey, I'd love to teach maybe something about how to upload a podcast. Like, because I was trying to start my own. So I was working with Apple Podcasts, learning all the little tools. And it was really hard to learn back then because there was just a really crappy interface. And they were like, yeah, no, we don't really have a need for teaching people how to do podcasts. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting. This was in 2018. I stayed there for 2019, 2020, nothing ever happened. And then 2020, there was a big update to the Apple Podcast platform. And they say, hey, we're leaning more into creator content stuff, and we want to start seeing if people want to build a subscriber base and they want to do all the things. And so Apple released a bunch of features about podcasting, subscribers, counts. They started competing with Spotify, basically. And at that point in time, I was already looking for something new to do. But what I had felt in my heart of it all, after meeting people so long and being at Apple, and this was the end of 2019, so right before the pandemic, I just enjoyed having good conversations with all my clients, all the people that I had met. I'd met doctors and therapists and coders and programmers for some of the biggest companies. I met a couple guys that worked at corporate Apple that worked with like the main executives, and they all just wanted to talk. Even these biggest guys that had so much money, and the doctors that was like the head surgeon at Sacred Heart in Spokane, he was like, I just want to talk, man. And I was like, all right, yeah, like, let's just chat. He's just ranting about stuff, ranting. And then I realized that I just like talking to people. That was like my first key thing. Fast forward to make it all connect. When I was leaving Apple and looking for something to do, I got an opportunity to set up a studio for me to record in. And I'm going to be very sparse on the details because it's a whole different story for how things actually happened. I got the opportunity to do a studio, mm-hmm. and when I started to interview people, they just started saying, hey, I just want to do this too. I just want to do this too. I just want to do it. I'm like, okay. At this point, everybody just wants to have a conversation, and it really started to lead me more into just producing for others. But where I connected the technology to what I had was I started to realize how much data I was putting out there in terms of SEO, all these stories, all these messages, and all this stuff. And I was like, there has to be a bigger piece to like what it is that I'm doing. And what I started to research and started to find out is that there's no podcast advertising there's no set and well-developed podcast advertising tools just yet. There's no production main platforms that are distributing to specific platforms. And there's just a big battle between Spotify, Apple, and Amazon on who has the most content. Mm-hmm. Amazon bought Wondery for like $30 million, which is literally a small podcast studio. Google did the same thing. Apple did the same thing. And they're just buying up content pieces. So me as the tech guy and as the owner of the studio, I'm trying to develop as much content as possible because I know that's my only way to really compete with these guys, is that if I don't produce at a mass scale and we just try to stick to our guns and just produce good low-end content, I guess, they're just going to consume it all. They're going to take it. They're going to use it on their platforms. And we're really just feeding them.
Feeding the beast.
Yeah. And I don't, when I realized that was what we were doing, is when I wanted to start develop my own stuff. And that's what's leading me to the next phase of business, which is trying to develop a, you know, own our own ecosystem of podcast production. So then that way, yes, I'm not saying I have the right or the right to do that on my own, but that's what I want to do. I want to be able to have my own piece of it. I don't have any plans on what to do with the data yet, but I know that if it's in my hands, or I guess it's coming towards me, I can see from a mile away if Apple's going to knock on my door and they're like, hey, we want all of that. We want it all. And what are you going to do?
I mean, I know someone who knows a thing or two about data.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, that's my move right now, is that I would love to help people, you know, get more info out there, get more data out there, because the more data that's out there is going to influence a lot of these black boxes on people. People that are not watching content that doesn't help them are going to get stuck in that box. And if I can do anything about it, it would be putting better, more content in multiple places for people to expand that box or break out of it. Can I control that? No. But can I slightly influence it by producing content? Yeah, I think so. And that's why we're trying to get more into technology about the AI that we do, editing, producing it fast, putting on multiple platforms, getting it where we can possibly, because that's the only way that we'll be able to compete with anybody in the future. It's just the data and the amount of information we can put out.
Mm-hmm.
I love that podcasters are teaching. You know, you're talking about tech. We have people that talk about recovery. We have people that talk about finance, Lyme disease, all sorts of good, great stuff. And I would love to keep that going. I just don't know how to what the future looks like in terms of where we can put that information, because at the end of the day, I don't have the say. Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Google still all have the say about what goes out. And I know this because we had one podcaster that got completely removed from every platform that we tried to put him on. I'm not going to say his name, won't talk about him specifically. He's here in Boise, but completely banned, shadow banned, everything. And he can't get on anything, which is scary. That's a scary place to be as a person, as an individual in online America. It's a very scary place to be.
I mean, like, the idea that you could be pushed off of all social media and cease to exist, mm-hmm. then, like...
Well, and the worst part, too, is that all the negative stuff about him is still on the
and online. You can't even address it.
Yeah, you can't do anything about it. So I don't know how he's doing. I haven't checked in with him because he's just kind of... I think he's fine, but to be in a place to where you could get completely removed offline after feeling already so isolated in a world, especially during the pandemic, and you can't leave your home, that's what scared me, and that's why I do what I do, because it's just kind of like, I would hate to feel like I'm a zero to end, like just non-existent. And I feel like that's what you will feel like if you get to a point where the digital world is just overruling everything. Yeah. To be wiped off the face of the internet. Oh man.
I mean, they even told me, like, when I worked in government agencies, to, like, go on and get your namespace.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to put anything on there, but have that handle.
Yeah.
In case you do want it in the future, or to make sure someone else doesn't take it and pretend to be you.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't imagine being wiped off of everything. Like, that's...
Well, hopefully Elon, or whether you agree with it, but with Twitter and Elon, hopefully he can try to get people to... realize that you're going to get caught for what you say, but you can also say what you want. Like, you have to be held responsible for the things you say, and you should be able to say what you want, but again, you need to be responsible for what you just said. So if you're spewing and saying all this garbage and you're getting mad because you're getting in trouble for it, yeah, it's because you said that. You straight up said that this is not acceptable, or you didn't agree with something, and a lot of people don't like you now. What did you expect to happen? We gave you the freedom of speech. We gave you the platform. You said it. And now what? Like, I don't know what to tell you. But I don't know if that's a dangerous space to be in, because then some people don't have the ability or knowledge to be able to differentiate between what they should consume. And then that's where the influence again happens. And yeah.
I mean, like, how do you feel about flat earthers? Do you think the earth is flat?
I'm not going to answer that question.
Because there are some people that genuinely believe the earth is flat. And then there are some people who are like, oh, yeah, the earth's flat. Totally. And so probably started out as
I don't think the Earth's flat. That's all I'm going to say, but I won't go into
it. But people should be allowed to say that?
I think people should be allowed to, I guess, express how they believe something may be. So then that way somebody like me, not that I'm going to make it my job or my mission to teach somebody that the Earth's not flat, but if I go out there and I've noticed that somebody's talking about that, I'll be like, oh, like, well, did you think about this? Or did you consider this? Or did you, and they'll be like, well, no, but... And then that's when they get into this whole area of like, okay, well, now that the information is out there and is at least implanted in their brain, maybe they change their mind eventually. And now they're a round earther believer. I don't know.
A lot of those people get locked into those beliefs and they're like, I will fight you.
And those are the people that I'm saying that are kind of a little bit more dangerous because they aren't able to navigate and figure out, hey, maybe I should really consider alternative or like all the pieces of information.
But I mean, like, that's why they... have like a standardized textbook. Like, this textbook is considered approved for public consumption by school age children.
And how long do you think that is going to last? And this is, I'll make sure we end it on this because we'll go on for hours on this part. Hold on.
I'm like,
my problem with what you just said is that I feel like we are entering and we have already entered an era where scholarly and academic writers and those individuals are almost non-existent, or we don't care about them because people watch way too much stuff on social media and they'll literally watch a guy that's wearing a scrub just because he called himself a Dr. Health on Instagram and that's his handle and he's talking about how to clean your ear. They'll take his advice before they will go to the library and grab a book written by some of the world's most incredible doctors and say, this is how you clean your ear.
Not even that. Google it.
But... okay.
Their kids now, instead of Googling it, go on to the platforms with the clips on it.
That's what I'm saying.
And
yes.
And use that. And there's no curation of those results. Whereas Google usually curates its results, has a little blurb at the top of, here is the official. And then like.
That leads into the regulations of information and data, which is basically my biggest problem is that in order to publish a book back in the days, you had accreditation, you had approval processes, you had to literally go through some of the biggest and hardest things to get a scholarly book into the universities. Now you can make a TikTok and a professor will even show it to a class. A student from the university will watch it and they'll use it to influence their decisions. I'm not saying all content's bad. There are some great pieces of content that people teach about health, people teach about things that are not very common in the general public. So if you're an individual looking for information on... eczema and you're watching a lot of people on TikTok that are actually showing you what they do for treatment, that's great. But then again, it opens up the floodgates for what data is allowed and which ones are approved. So then that way there's not these doctors or these lawyers or these guys that are just talking about situational circumstances and giving information about that. And then for some reason, this kid listened to this TikTok, tried the same exact thing and it didn't work. And it's like, well, yeah, we could have Googled it, but when you Google police brutality, it pops up TikTok videos. Like,
but usually those are curated on some level.
Some level. I totally, and that's why I say there's that part of the good content that's out there, people that are doing justice.
We trust Wikipedia, but it's technically free, and you could go out and edit Wikipedia to say anything you want.
But they won't publish it if it's like ridiculous.
They'll publish it, but chances are there are so many other people that are also authors on it that get a notification. They'll go in and edit it later that night.
Yeah.
And then eventually, if you keep making that edit, you'll get banned.
Well, so that's also why they didn't let people in academics quote Wikipedia, is because it's not a credible source.
I mean, I have 17 peer-reviewed publications, and I have a book and stuff. Do I think anyone read my book on the spectral reflectance of Coleoptera? Do you even know? Like,
right.
No, I don't think anyone actually read it, but you have to write a book in order to get a graduate degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the rule in academia. And then we write these things that aren't interesting. Like, do you want to go read 120 pages about Coleoptera and spectroscopy?
No.
I mean, like, do I even want to go read my own book?
No, I get your point.
So, I mean, like, whereas, like, watching, like, me do a TikTok on it and explain it really quickly is probably way more interesting. And heck, I'd probably have a lot more fun making it, but they would not hand me a master's degree for it.
No, they wouldn't. But do you think that they could live, like, I think this is kind of what Elon is kind of doing a little bit, is that there has to be a way for us to be able to verify these identities on accounts and on platforms so that people like you that do the scholarly articles, the graduate, write those books, like, I mean, we're using verification for just influence numbers. Like, there has to be a way to verify and...
And I know someone who had a fake account made of them, and it had more followers than their real account.
Yeah.
And we flagged it and flagged it and flagged it and flagged it. Finally, after 6 months of flagging it constantly, it came down. My question, I guess, to you is, obviously, you don't remember the 1800s, but in the 1800s, there were snake oil salesmen. Mm-hmm. And they would come around and say, here's this oil, here's this oil. You know, people would buy tonics that, you know, had things that would basically kill them if they took, you know, 2 teaspoons full of. If you took one, you just end up really high, and it wouldn't actually get rid of the tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Now we have the Food and Drug Administration that regulates it. So if I go buy Tylenol, I know it is Tylenol. And if it isn't, someone is going to get in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to be like that, but, like, I don't want to deal with the snake oil salesman out on the corner being like, bottle of blah, 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 like, you know, and then it makes my hair fall out and I die.
Yeah.
So
I'm on the fence between regulation. I really am, because I don't know whether I'd live in a world, rather live in a world where we're told what to do and what to say, or live in a world where it's all free and we need to develop the best judgment, you know, practices that we can.
And I guess that goes back to, like, the BBC pretending to have a deep fake of the Queen and then having her do a backflip.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, like, think about what you're consuming, basically, was the message. And otherwise, like, it will have to be regulated, unfortunately, at some point, because if anyone can say anything at any point in time. I mean, one of the first things, if you recall, when they opened the floodgates on Twitter, is that people went out and made fake accounts. And then they started, like, I remember the Chiquita banana brand,
went out and
started harassing people.
Yep,
they had a lot of followers and everything that seemed legit. And so then Twitter lost brand endorsements and brands were leaving the platform because it's not regulated. It's turning into 4chan.
Yep. Yeah. And that's why I'm on the fence about it, because I don't know what I would prefer, really.
And I don't want people to be regulated. I want people to protest and be able to say whatever they want to say. But, like, I also think, like, I have a right as, you know, like, I shouldn't feel threatened by someone and stuff like that. Or blatant untruths.
Yep.
So where is that line? Because each person has a different line.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you regulate it? And because there's obviously, like, all the way over there is black and all the way over here is white. But, like, in the middle is gray. And we want the line somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. Yep. It's definitely a scary, not a scary, it's definitely a very, very complicated, I guess, area for people to develop even further processes in, because I don't know what would happen if we did kind of control it the way we do with books, news articles, magazines, stuff like that.
The thing we don't need to do is have AI regulate stuff. Like, that is not what we should be doing. I build AI. I don't think we need an AI to go out and be the police on the internet.
No, I don't either, and I agree with you 100%, so hopefully that doesn't happen. I'll keep my fingers crossed, but I don't think that, I feel like I have a pretty strong feeling that's coming. So we'll see.
We covered a lot of different topics. Is there any closing remarks or anything you want to say?
Yeah, I would say just pay attention. You know, don't point fingers at everybody and say, this is their fault, this is our fault. See what you can do on the individual level for yourself. Talked a little bit about the black box, about how learning that the information you're seeing is for a specific reason. And if there's anything you can do, it's control your own mindset about it, your own emotions, your own feelings, and get outside, get off the phone, go play with mud, something. I don't know. But, like, we really need to take a little bit more responsibility about the stuff that we're consuming, but also be responsible about learning what's out there, so that way we're not making the same mistakes over and over again, year after year. That's what I would say to everybody is, yeah, maybe we talked about some scary and crazy stuff, but just give it a chance. Give tech a chance, and you may be able to control it more than it can control you.
And ask questions, Google stuff, because you don't know what rabbit hole you're going to go down that ends up turning into, like, a whole life. For instance, what about podcasts? Why Apple's podcast and the weird interface, and then all of a sudden now you're running your own studio making, like, probably almost all of the content for this location.
A majority of it. Yeah, yes,
like 90%. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, but if I walked up to you, what, like 3-4 years ago, would you believe me if I said you were going to be making all of the content for this city?
No. I can definitely say that my decisions and the things I exposed myself to and I listened to was what brought me here today. Mm-hmm. And like you just said, I paid attention to this. This is what I focus on. And now look at me. I'm not mad about it. I'm actually enjoying it a lot. But very interesting. Actually, you just kind of made me realize a roundabout way of, yeah, I did that to myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Sarah in Tech. And I just want to give a shout out to, if you want to learn more about Sarah in Tech, follow me on LinkedIn. Just look for Sarah Herberger, that's H-E-R-B-E-R-G-E-R, or on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, we have Sarah in Tech as the handle.